All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. And welcome to the SLS Cast, episode 4. This is Matt.
And this is Tim.
Very well done, sir. That was much better than the first episode.
I was ready for it. I was preparing. I've been preparing for it all afternoon.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
Indeed.
Well, I am very glad that you were preparing for it. Okay, so, anything fun and interesting happening in your life today?
Or
recently?
Not really. I guess yesterday was 4th of July, and
it was. Happy birthday, America. 235 years old. Years young, even.
And still looking great. Still
That's
looking
right.
wonderful.
Yeah, a friend of mine said, don't look a day over 225.
Exactly. And the whole fireworks thing was kind of a lull in the holiday, though. You know, you always look forward to going out and blowing shit up.
This is true. This is true. And for those who are wondering what the hell we're talking about, we do live in Texas and Houston. And because of the lack of rainfall, we were denied fireworks this year. So any fireworks we watched were either illegally watched or watched on television legally. So that's kind of where that was at. Nothing really interesting happened for me either. I had my birthday last week and got a gift card from my dad with which I went kind of insane purchasing video games on Steam. Because they were having a sale. They're having their summer sale. So I got, like, every single Grand Theft Auto game ever made. And I got the BioShocks and stuff like that. So, because they were on sale for ridiculously low prices.
Steam? What is Steam?
It's Valve Entertainment. They make video games like Half-Life and Half-Life 2. They did Portal, Portal 2, that kind of stuff. They have an online component to their publishing arm, and they call it Steam, and it's basically you go there and can buy games online and play people online. It's a big and so they have a store and you buy all your games and download it there and all that kind of stuff.
Cool.
I like to game and I like to watch movies and stuff, and then outside of that I like to, you know, go spend time with my girls and, you know, meet up with my buddy Tim at Walmart where I'm buying stuff for my special kitty.
to mask the smell of feces.
It would have been a lot funnier if you had not thrown in the idea that now they know I'm buying cat litter. But that's okay. You know, it's all good. It's all good. So, guess let's jump in then. Get right started up here with some movie news. What do you got for us this week, sir? I'll finish up. Well, you know, it's always better when you seem to roll in first and I'll just come in after you with what I got to.
Alrighty, but well, yet again, like a couple weeks ago, it has been a pretty slow news week and a half. There have been a few trailers that have been debuting. The first is a trailer called 11-11-11, as in the date November 11, 2011. It's a Darren Lynn Bossum horror film. He's the guy that directed Saw 2, which was an enjoyable Saw movie. Saw 3 and Saw 4. And yeah, we'll have that link posted up for people to scope out. It looks like a very cliche horror film. But who knows, it could be good. It could be sucky. But seeing how the line of horror films are, you know, rolling out now, other than I hear that Insidious was a pretty good haunted house flick, I don't know. It could be crappy. Actually, it's probably going to be crappy. But who knows? Who knows? We will see, I guess, you know, what will happen on 11-11-11. In other trailer news, the trailer for Steven Spielberg's War Horse debuted last week. War Horse is based, actually, about World War I. Because in World War I, you know, they used to have cavalry, you know, fighting before they really had people in, you know, well, before they had people had people in planes and tanks and, you know, with big machine guns and whatnot. They were, you know, they were cavalrymen on horses. And
there's an interesting note historically I learned today. There's a man in Mexico who is highly revered in Mexico by the name of Pancho Villa. And due to some backstabbing by the U.S. government. He decided to attack the United States.
Yeah.
And successfully did so for, you know, his little band of rebels and stuff as they came in and hit stuff. And so the American government went after him, went into Mexico after him to hunt him down. And it was the first time prior to World War I that planes and tanks were used. They were actually able to try him out.
Really? To find Pancho Villa?
Yeah, which they did not.
Yeah, because wasn't that like a part of the whole Rough Rider thing with Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt?
He may have been with the Rough Riders, and the Rough Riders might have taken part in that. I'm not sure. I just happened to read that today and thought that was interesting, and since you were talking about them still using the cavalry, that, you know, this was the first time prior to World War I that the government got to use airplanes and tanks.
Oh, cool.
Battle, so to speak.
Well, this is not only a film program, but it's also a history lesson.
That's right. We like to educate you on all things related to movies, even when they're tied to a trailer.
Exactly. And yeah, but the trailer looks fun. Actually, the trailer is about a... I guess it's mostly about the relationship between a horse and the horse's owner, you know, the boy who takes care of the horse. And apparently the U.S. recruit the horse to be a part of the cavalry fighting, and the boy goes after the horse. Like, he's underage, so he joins the military or the army or whatnot. And he basically goes on the search to look for him during World War I. So it looks pretty cool. Highly suggest people to check it out. It looks classic Spielberg, you know, very epic, actiony Spielberg. It comes out in I believe December, right around when Tintin comes out. So you'll have two Spielberg movies this December.
What do you think about that? I'm sorry to jump in. What do you think about that Tintin movie? That I'm a little I don't know. I'm not sure where I land on that. I've seen the trailer a couple of times, though.
I think it looks just... Well, I guess... It keeps true to the drawings and the illustrations from the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is terrific. I love that's what they did. But I think it's going to be just a fun adventure. I think it's going to be, like, classic fun. As if... You know, just as if you are reading a Tintin novel. To where, you know, there's going to be great characters, and I'm sure there's going to be terrific comedy. Simon Pegg is in it, and they have a terrific cast. And I don't know, I'm really pulling for the movie. I guess it can go either way. Peter Jackson is producing it. The writer for it is Edgar Wright, who I love Edgar Wright. He's the guy that he wrote and directed Hot Fuzz.
Nice.
Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and also Shaun of the Dead. So he knows his shit.
Well, all right. Okay. Yeah, and again, I did not realize it was written by him, and that makes me feel a lot better about it. I am not familiar with the novels myself. I did not read them. My earliest introduction to Tintin was the HBO television series back in 93.
The cartoon?
Yeah, The Adventures of Tintin.
Yeah.
And I liked it. I thought it was good. And so I realized, obviously, that it was based on novels and stuff back then. Still never got around to reading them, obviously. But I just, having only just seen the trailer a couple of times, I wasn't really sure. But you have definitely reassured me on that. So, awesome. Carry on, sir.
No, yeah, it's going to be terrific, and I think it'll be a very productive year for Spielberg this December. Anyway, the another trailer is Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol with Simon Pegg and Tom Cruise and also Jeremy Renner. Jeremy Renner's going to be in it. I think the movie looks terrific. I think it's going to be so much fun, especially it's going to be directed by Brad Bird, who directed such Pixar classics as Ratatouille and The Incredibles.
Incredibles, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He also did Iron Giant back in the late 90s. So I'm looking forward to it. I think this is going to be a terrific live-action debut for Brad Bird. But yeah, are you a fan of the Mission Impossible movies?
One and two. Three looked absolutely stupid based on the trailer, and I never saw it.
Well, another trailer news... there's a new trailer for the Three Musketeers movie directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. And last but not least, for trailers, they're releasing Spy Kids All the Time in the World. And this one, again, is directed by Robert Rodriguez. Again, we'll have this posted on the page, but apparently the movie is not just 2D, but it's 3D. But not only 3D, but also 4D. Now, you may ask, what is 4D? Well, if you remember as a kid...
You remember Batman Forever, either one, that's fine.
Well, yeah, and you always wondered if, you know, what is going to be the next, you know, feat in film past 3D? And the answer is aromascope. Yeah, Centorama or whatever. And this is what this film has. And it's not what people are going to think it is. I mean, theaters are not going to be bringing in these smell, you know, machines to pump out smells of gas, farts, all this stuff. Instead, for free, and this is how they're really trying to market it, for the price of a 3D ticket, and I believe it's for 2D as well, you get for free a card. Just, I guess it's a cardboard, a plastic card, that during the movie, I guess it'll tell you when, but you scratch and sniff the card. And whatever is up on the screen, you get to smell it. And my question is, I wonder if this is gonna be like 3D, like after the film, do you get to keep the card or
I was just about to ask that.
Or do you like throw it in a bin where they have to like sanitize it to, you know, give it to the next
I don't know, but I mean, they obviously figured out the best kind of movie is like some, you know, half-assed kids movie that they don't have to try on to try something like this, because here's what's going to happen. It's going to be like, you know, you're going to see the little visual cue that they give, and I would go to this movie one time at its most possible packed point, that I like a Saturday afternoon or something, I guess, and sit in the back row just so I could watch 350 heads all drop at the same time. You hear it go, and then just so I could hear and watch that, and people kind of go, and just to see, because the general reaction I'm sure is going to be, so that's what that was all about. It's not going to be, wow, this is cool.
So. Well, in the movie, are they going to like pause for people to?
I know, because how fast do you need to scratch? I mean, you know, yeah. And I don't know. Maybe the card they'll hand you the card, and it'll be Lord Helmet going, "Fooled you," and that's it. You know. Perhaps it will be that. I don't know.
In other movie news, actually, in other Spielberg news, he's currently in production for a Abraham Lincoln biopic that Liam Neeson was originally going to be playing Abraham Lincoln. Now I believe Daniel Day-Lewis will be Abraham Lincoln, which I think is actually a pretty good choice to play Lincoln. One of the characters that they just announced who will be playing William Seward, who was the governor of New York, I believe, at the time, is David Strathern. He played William S. Moreau in the George Clooney flick Good Night and Good Luck. He's a terrific, terrific character actor, and I believe, I think at least, it was worth mentioning in the movie news. So we'll have new news on the World War Z film starring Brad Pitt, another zombie film, which is probably one of my favorite film genres. Are zombies, and I think that might be my every Halloween I like to have I do a Halloween theme for myself where I watch a particular horror film, you know, throughout the month of October, and I think zombie will be my theme for this year because I dig them.
Cool. Well, I don't have much again. Most of the stuff that I saw, I wasn't really that interested in, and anything that was remotely interesting, you just covered. So I will drop into that real quick by just simply adding a few things that I found that I thought were interesting. There is a trailer for It's a teaser trailer for the new Pixar movie Brave, and looks fairly interesting, so definitely we'll have that available for you. There is also a little interesting little article, as a photo gallery article related to Yahoo that I found, that is interesting tidbits of information about the supporting stars of Harry Potter. Things going over, you know, Helena Bonham Carter, Alan Rickman, you know, Michael Gambon and stuff like, you know, so all these different people and their different relations to one another. Kenneth Branagh's in it, all that good stuff. Also tying into Kenneth Branagh there, I'm not exactly sure what it takes. I don't know if there was politics involved or if maybe too many fanboys didn't like Thor. I'm not sure. But the movie had a $150 million budget. It made $438 million, basically. And he's not directing the sequel. That is just a complete bummer to me. So I will provide a link to that so you can read his words on that. So very upset about that. In lighter news, the last thing that I think that I have for you is a... I like to read Reddit. It's a nice waste of time. I like to read IMGUR. Also a nice waste of time. It's a good way to blow 15 or 20 minutes, and sometimes longer than that. And I stumbled across a great, 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 great short film called Plot Device. It is 9 minutes and 14 seconds long, and I highly recommend you watch it. I can't talk about it because any little thing, because it's so short, will give away this movie. Imagine, I can sum it up for you this way. Imagine if a plot device was a real thing.
Okay.
A tangible thing you could hold in your hand.
All right.
And that is what this movie is about. It's great. It is hilarious. So, definitely, we'll have that link, and hopefully that you will watch that.
By that description, I'm very confused, yet intrigued.
Good.
So I will check it out myself.
Okay, good. So yeah, that was it. That's really all I had. Woo! All right, so Three Squared segment. We had our favorite writer was... the Three Squared for this week. We forgot to mention that in the show last week, but I did put it up on the website, so if you went to slscast.com and checked it out, then you should be up to speed. Tim, what was your Three Squared choice for writer?
Okay, so I don't have an all-time favorite writer. I mean, it's kind of like choosing your all-time favorite movie. I mean, there are just so many different genres that are so entertaining, that have so many different aspects to it, that I would have to look down upon the person that, you know, has the balls to say this is their favorite, you know, film. However, one of my favorite writers is actually a duo. And they are the Coen brothers. And they did such movies as Raising Arizona, Blood Symbol, their first movie, Barton Fink, Hudsucker Proxy, Lady Killers, No Country for Old Men, or most recently, True Grit. So my three favorite Coen brothers films are Big Lebowski, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And last but not least, probably one movie. I know, Matt, you haven't seen this, but I'm sure quite a few people haven't seen this film. But A Serious Man, which came out a couple years ago, their screenplay was nominated for the Academy Award, but they did not receive it. So yeah, those are the three. Any of you listening who has yet to see The Big Lebowski, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Or A Serious Man, I highly recommend, especially those three. But actually, I recommend all their movies. All their movies, other than, you know, one or two of them, are phenomenal, are really good. Especially the Hudsucker Proxy. That's a terrific movie. Very underrated, I think.
All right, so my choice for The Three Squared was Quentin Tarantino. Definitely, everybody normally thinks of him as a director, but a lot of people don't realize that he writes almost everything that he directs. And he's done everything, you know, Reservoir Dogs, True Romance, Pulp Fiction, you know, all this wonderful stuff, recent, you know, Inglourious Basterds, Grindhouse, all that wonderful stuff. So it was really neat to see, you know, that he really does a lot of stuff. So the three movies that I was going to pick for, that I picked for him, definitely going to be Reservoir Dogs and Jackie Brown and Kill Bill, collectively. Kill Bill, mainly because, you know, you really get to see just what kind of a storyteller he really, really is, because, you know, it was the, everything was standard fare, what you typically would expect in Volume 1. And Volume 2, while a lot of people that I talked to were kind of turned off by Volume 2 because it was not what they had come to expect, you know, kind of like drinking a Coke and tasting a Dr. Pepper, or you're expecting a Coke and you get Dr. Pepper. It really, when I went back and I watched that movie a second time, definitely showed off, showcased his full ability to truly tell a story. So, yeah, so that's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to do Reservoir Dogs, Jackie Brown, and Kill Bill.
Yeah,
that's the set.
That's pretty good. I like that a lot.
Outstanding, outstanding. All right, so next week's Three Squared. So see, not forgetting this time.
Nice.
Is going to be an actress that has never even been nominated for an Academy Award. Your
I got
favorite
mine.
Actress. Yeah, yeah,
I've got
yeah,
mine.
You're not, yeah, whatever. I've got to do a little research, but yes, yeah, so your favorite actress that has never been nominated for an Academy Award. Okay, it's probably really hard to find, maybe even virtually impossible to find an actor or an actress that's never been nominated for anything, because they've got awards for the stupidest stuff out there. The Spirit Award, the Teen Choice Award, the I Saw You in 1995 on the Side of the Street and You Were Nice to Me Award. you know, there's...
What kind of voice was that?
I don't know. A fanboy voice. I don't know. So, we're just going to stick with never having been nominated for an Academy Award, your favorite actress. So, let's discuss movies. Let's see, I went and saw Cars 2 and Transformers, which, as I have been saying, it was called Transformers Dark of the Moon. I thought it should have been called Transformers I'm Really Sorry About the Second One. Because it was really good. It was really, really good. But its first weekend take was like 30% smaller this time. Like, it did $127 million its first weekend for the second one, but only did $97 million this time.
Oh, well, I thought they made $97 million on, like, just from Wednesday till Friday.
Yeah, the first 3 days was what it was. The first 3 days, they had done $127 million for Revenge of the Fallen, and the first 3 days this time was $97 million. So they, it was rough, you know. Then now they were still number one. They still had the best domestic 3-day opening because they trounced Pirates by $7 million.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, I bet.
I think their worldwide take through yesterday, if I remember reading correctly, was like $368 million. So, I think they're gonna be okay on making their money back for it.
Yeah, they're already talking about a fourth movie.
They should. It shouldn't have been just a trilogy. I'm glad they closed it out. I mean, who knows what kind of stuff that they can do and change and everything. But I have always believed, and for better or for worse, I'm going to use Star Trek as an example, because it is by far and away the best example to provide, that if you have great characters and you have good direction and a good story, there's no reason to not make a movie about it.
Yeah.
And for better or for worse, Star Trek has had 11 movies. 11. That are all canon and that all work. Even this most recent one, the one that J.J. Abrams did, it is canon because it follows it. They consider it a reboot, but it is technically canon because they send original Spock back in time.
Yeah.
And so that's 11 movies. And yes, there were duds. I'm not trying to say that every movie was perfect or that every movie was stellar. There were duds. And for time immemorial, my favorite movie will always be Star Trek II: Wrath of Khan. Second favorite will always be The Voyage Home.
Yeah.
We can, and then they kind of, you know, go back and forth in there.
What's your least favorite?
Ooh, it's a tie between 5 and 1.
Final Frontier was 5?
Yeah, yeah.
Directed by Shatner?
Yes. But yeah, 5 was pitiful, man. 5 was pitiful. First one was boring.
I liked it though. I thought it was like technically it was pretty cool.
Boring, but that's just it. Is that it? You can't carry a movie just on technical aspects, especially when the general movie public is not you or I, who can at least appreciate the technical aspects of a movie.
Yeah.
So long and short of it is. Using Star Trek as the example, there's no reason why you can't have 15 Transformers movies. I mean, you know, will it get tired? Well, will you need to choose the times and the storylines and how to present the movies? Yes, of course, those will always be factors. But when a movie is good, there's no reason to not make more.
So
that's all I'm saying. So with Transformers, really, really liked it. What were you going to say?
I did not like the second one because it was just too much crap. Cool special effects, too much crap. I thought the first one was all right only because of the humor in the first one was pretty funny. You know, they had really good humor. Now, in the third one, does it have good humor?
Yes.
It does?
The humor definitely makes a comeback.
All right, cool. Then I'm looking for, because I've actually heard people say they really liked it. I've read some really shoddy reviews. I've read some really good reviews. So I would
it's almost as if that second one never happened.
Oh, that's good.
And they kind of treat it in the third one. They really don't. They really try to stay away from it as much as possible. They don't really even mention it.
Yeah.
Except for where they have to keep the story going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great special effects. The humor is back. The story was good, well executed. As a matter of fact, when you watch this movie, especially since you've now seen Green Lantern,
I did.
When you watch this movie, look at Shia LaBeouf. And you will probably think to yourself, like I thought to myself, man, he should have been Hal Jordan.
In terms of the writing, not
in looks or anything like that.
That's a good point. I haven't thought about that.
You'll see when you see the writing and the way he delivers the lines and how Shia LaBeouf, you know, does portrays the character, that it's like, man, these writers should have been working on Green Lantern and Ryan Reynolds might have been funny when he was supposed to be funny.
Yeah. No, I know. I gotcha.
So that's what I have to say about Transformers. The Cars 2.
I enjoyed Cars 2.
It was all right. It was all right.
Minus the Larry the Cable Guy stuff. I thought it was fun.
So Cars 2. This is kind of where the problems begin for me with Cars 2. Okay, there's a little scene that takes place in the movie Shaft with Samuel L. Jackson, one that was done in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "You know, when guys like you go down for good, when they get aspirations, when they try and rise above their station, and that's what they did with Larry the Cable Guy. That's what they did with Mater." They call them second bananas, sidekicks, whatever, for a reason. Because they are meant to support the main character and the protagonist of the film. They're not meant to become the protagonist of the film.
Yeah.
Did they do a bad job with it? No. Could they have done better? Yes. And you know, and that's kind of how I walk away from the whole movie. Did they do a bad job? No. Could they have done better? Yes. I walk away from that movie going, it was okay. I was not a fan of them combining Cars and The Incredibles. The feel of The Incredibles should have been left with The Incredibles. It's that kind of a movie. You get that aspect. You get the idea of the guns, the violence, the mystique, the, you know, all that kind of stuff that's going on. Great, cool. Have that, do that. That's wonderful. The world of Cars is not a world for guns and bullets and, you know, and I'm not averse to that. My kids watch The Incredibles. My kids watch, you know, Disney movies and stuff, and people die. I have no problem with that. You know, I am there to teach my kids the idea, the context. And there were people who were really, you know, giving Cars bad reviews because of the guns and the violence. And yeah, you do see, for lack of a term, a car die in this movie.
It blows up.
Well, yeah, it hits the water and explodes and everything. So, and then another one, yeah, they do it off screen. But, you know, And for me, the world of Cars was the world that they set up in the first movie. They don't recreate that, and I get it. It's a sequel that, you know, they're trying to do bigger things and expand the universe. That's fine. But at its heart, at its core, you have to keep the movie about what it's about, which is knowing who you are and realizing who you are and staying true to who you are. And while they try to get that message across with, you know, Mater and Lightning McQueen, you know, and everything.
Friendship thing.
Yeah, the friendship stuff. And, you know, they take such a roundabout way of doing it with the plot that they kind of missed, I felt. And the other thing that the movie was getting a lot of flack about was the big oil. Big oil was the enemy because, you know, it was alternative fuels and, you know, well, your cars, you run on fuel. I hate to break that to you, but that's what you do because you're a car. you know, and in the context of the movie and in the context of the world they live in, yes, the bad guy being big oil makes sense. Unfortunately, kids watching this movie who are actually being indoctrinated into, you know, thinking alternative fuel is good and only good and big oil is automatically bad and evil, they don't get the luxury of understanding the context. They just get what they see.
Yeah.
So again, could they have, you know, was it bad? No. Could they have done it better? Yes.
See, what I think I liked about it were the things that you did not like about it. Like, I did not care for Cars 1 because I thought the movie lacked fun and I thought it was too mushy-gushy, I suppose. Like, for instance, Up. I thought Up was too mushy-gushy, as well as even Finding Nemo, it didn't have the fun aspect that, I guess, like Toy Story or even A Bug's Life or Monsters Incorporated has. My deal with Pixar is that I understand every movie there has to be, or they're going, you know, to like teach a lesson. You know, there's some sort of lesson. There's some sort of, I guess, you know, heart to it that goes along with these movies, and I think that is terrific. I think, you know, a lesson needs to be learned, or there has to be a point to where, you know, some characters have to change throughout the movie. I think that is great, especially for a quote-unquote kids film or family film. However, what I love the movie The Incredibles because it really lacked the really mushy-gushy you know, oh, well, you know, we got to, you know, we have to include something that, you know, that's going to, you know, touch the hearts of the families or touch the hearts of people. And, you know, it, which, you know, has them cry. With me, I mean, I don't mind getting teary-eyed or feeling, you know, passionately about something to where at the end I get sad. That's fine. But I've been kind of getting, you know, I'm kind of getting sick of that with Pixar movies to where, you know, it's becoming something to expect. At least with me. So what I liked about Cars 2 was the fun aspect. I love the take on spy films, especially the movies. I mean, I have not seen a spy movie recently, maybe other than Salt, that was actually that I thought was really, really fun and exciting. Especially with the names. Like, I love the name for Michael Caine's character, Finn McMissile, or Holly Shiftwell. I love it. I love it. Especially the bad guy, Sir Miles Axelrod. You know, it's just they had these terrific names to go along with these British, you know, Secret Service cars. Especially the bad guy has a terrific bad guy name. Oh, spoiler alert. I kind of gave away something right then. But and the comedy was terrific as well. And now, the one thing I did not like about it was the character of Mater. And I do agree with you completely that that basically the character that was supposed to be basically the butt of every joke in the first movie is now, you know, pretty much the main character in the second movie. To where whenever he said something stupid, I mean, I'm just not a fan of how Larry the Cable Guy talks. You know, how he speaks, how his language is conveyed from him personally. And my beef with it is that it seemed like Mater is definitely a Larry the Cable Guy vehicle. To whereas I just wish he
could, pun intended.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I wish he could create. I wish he could create a freaking character for it. And grant, and I'm sure Larry the Cable Guy himself is a character, but I'm sick and tired of hearing, "Oh, that's funny right there," when his car is saying, his car Mater is saying it. Now, the mushy-gushy stuff for the film, like where the actual heart and the, you know, the aw or the, "Oh, poor Mater" stuff happens in the movie, I thought he handled that pretty well. I mean, I thought he conveyed that pretty well to where, you know, in a way that I kind of felt bad for him, in a way. But then again, it's like, Mater, you are a dumbass. You know, you are a dumbass. If I was Lightning McQueen, I would have told you to get the hell out of here because you caused too many problems. Now, I thought the reasoning behind, oh, well, I think Lightning McQueen should apologize for this, I didn't think so. I mean, if somebody screwed up my race, and I told them they were, you know, I told them to leave. I, you know, there was a reason why I told them to leave because I didn't want them to screw anything up. But regardless of that stuff, of that portion of the film that I didn't care for, I just think the special effects blew me the hell away. I mean, I think the special effects in this film, the computer animation in this film is gorgeous. And I think it is probably the most scenery-specific and most detailed Pixar film made to date, especially with the closing, the very end car chase scene where they're going through, where were they at? Were they in Italy or France?
At the end of the movie, are in Britain.
They're in Britain? Well, yeah, they're going through, like, the cobblestone streets and the buildings are going by. Through that entire, like, 5 or 10 minutes, I could have sworn that was an actual, you know, that like they went out with cameras and actually filmed the, you know, real live scenery and kind of incorporated it somehow into, you know, into the film. And I just thought it was gorgeous. So with the scenery itself and the comedy, because I think the comedy and the play on, you know, 007 and other spy movies was just brilliant. And I actually really enjoyed the story. I love the complexity of, you know, Big Oil being, you know, being the bad guy and, you know, talking about alternative fuels. I just thought it was a very smart movie. And I think with a spy movie, if you choose to do it, it has to be you know, a very smart idea. Because unlike so many other spy movies, it's kind of like a generic, oh, this person wants to take over the world, oh, this person wants to do that. But instead, especially for a kid's movie, you have somebody, you know, something that, you know, is a little bit more adult. And I guess to me, I think some kids could really get into it. I know when I was a kid, if I was younger, I totally would have loved it. I would have totally gotten into it. So I think there was plenty of aspect or plenty of film there to where kids could have enjoyed it, and also adults could really get a kick out of it.
Well, that is interesting. I'm just going to have a slight rebuttal. So according to Rotten Tomatoes, which is really the only aggregate site that I pay attention to, there might be better ones out there, I don't know, but Cars has a fresh rating of 74%, and I loved it, and you did not. Cars 2 has a rotten rating of 35%. I didn't really care for it, and you liked it. So that's all I'm gonna say. So I'm just gonna leave it there, so we don't spend 25 minutes on Cars 2. So moving along, because you know we've totally killed forever on that. You finally got around to seeing Green Lantern. What did you think of Green Lantern?
Okay, well, first off, I know you did not like it. I think, did you say that you enjoyed, you thought the special effects were pretty cool, but...
Yeah, I upgraded it from terrible to meh.
To meh. And I can definitely see how, you would think that. And I saw the movie, I watched it twice, kind of, sort of. I thought the movie was entertaining. It's not an amazing film. I would prefer to go see... I prefer, of course, X-Men First Class over Green Lantern. However, I thought Green Lantern was better than Superman Returns, only because I love the look of the film. I'm very... I think, to me, to make a perfect movie, you have to have... to have a good movie, you have to have a great storyline. You have to have good characters. You have to have, you know, just something that carries the film. You have to have just something to carry the film. I mean, especially the actors. You have to have the best actors that you can possibly find to play the characters to carry the film. However, there are those movies that sometimes they are just so visually appealing. That kind of makes up for the really shoddy either characters or really shoddy storyline. Now, in the case of the Green Lantern, I thought visually the movie looked really cool. Character-wise, I thought the characters were actually pretty good. Story-wise, the story was, it was interesting. I mean, the universe that it creates is interesting, but the humor fails completely. There might be a couple little giggles every now and then, but I would have to agree with what you said earlier. I could totally see Shia LaBeouf. Yeah, I can definitely see Shia LaBeouf playing Hal Jordan. However, I thought Ryan Reynolds did a pretty good job. I mean, minus the corny dialogue that he says, which isn't his fault, because I thought he portrayed the character of Hal Jordan pretty well. I don't know if you're a fan of the comics or read any of the comics. Well, I was talking to people that are big fans of the comics, and most of them said the movie did a pretty good job of kind of adapting the beginning of it, because if I remember correctly, I believe they're looking at Green Lantern as part of a trilogy. So the first movie is based on, you know, kind of the origin, like setting the movie up, which I thought they did a pretty good job. I thought at times it was rushed. I thought a lot of stuff happened in an hour and 40 minutes. And I thought they did a great job for setting up the next bad guy, who was Sinestro. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. To where, you know, and apparently they are starting pre-production for the second one, which hopefully...
Despite the terrible reviews and underperformance at the box office, they are already working on the second one.
Yeah, and So I thought the movie was entertaining. I don't think it was bad. I thought the bad guy was pretty good. Stellan Skarsgård played a pretty fun.
I'm telling you, yeah, he was my favorite. That was, I stand by what I said last week. If you see that movie, you see that movie for him. He completely steals every scene he's in, and he was just amazing. He was amazing as part of the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's worth it. I mean, paying $9.50 to see the movie, was it worth it? I would think it was. You know, I enjoyed it. So
well, I was definitely glad I only paid $7.50.
Oh, did you get a student discount?
No, I just went and saw it during the day.
Oh.
In 2D.
You met Mago. Yeah, I saw it in 2D as well. But, yeah, so that's my review in a nutshell. I mean, it's nothing amazing, but I thought it was most enjoyable.
Cool beans. All right, well then let's jump into the movies that we recommended and saw for each other here, I guess. I would like to start on this one.
Yeah,
I got to watch A Hard Day's Night, and clearly one of the better movies that I have seen in a while.
Good.
It is just a delightful, simple little romp through a couple of days in the life of the Beatles back in '64. Mm-hmm. And at the height of Beatlemania there in Europe. And, it was very funny, especially the guy who played the grandpa was actually on, Steptoe and Son.
Oh, Wilfred Bramble.
Yeah, Wilfred Bramble. Wilfred Bramble. And he was on the show, and he plays a dirty old man.
Yeah.
On the sitcom, and so it was hilarious he's such a clean old man, isn't he? And they just kept, you know, referring, so, but even if you don't get the inside joke, it's still funny, because as it goes on, you know, he kind of is the villain of the film, so to speak, and so you get to see him doing all these dastardly deeds and all this kind of stuff, and you see how bad he is, and yet everybody, but he's such a clean old man, don't you think? So that was really good. The jokes are, you know, just quick one-liners, really, jumping back and forth. So I really liked that. It was a little slow. There was a little slow in some parts, so kind of the pacing was a little bit off. But that was also, I mean, this is a movie that I think has aged very well, considering it is getting on to be about 50 years old. So, you know, it's 48 years old at this point, I think, mm-hmm. Right? 64?
Yeah. So how'd you get to America? Turn left at Greenland.
Yeah. you know, and I think my single favorite line out of the, or the little gag, I guess, is there's a tailor in one of the hotel rooms or the stage man, whatever, at one point, and he's trying to measure Paul McCartney for a coat, and he's got the tape across his shoulders, and then they get called away really quick, and so he walks out, and he's kind of left holding the poor tailor's just kind of left like, wait a minute, and John just walks up with a pair of scissors and goes, I hereby declare this bridge open, and cuts the, just cuts the measuring tape and walks away. So, you know, there's tons of gags like that, and it's very simple, nothing overly complex, and they definitely treated themselves and the movie as a lighthearted little romp. It does not take itself seriously at any point. And that's what keeps the movie so fun and fresh throughout. Plus, it's, you know, nice to, you know, see them poking fun at each other.
And the movie broke ground in the 60s. Like, there has yet to be, until A Hard Day's Night, there was yet a movie that was anything like this. I mean, this movie had wit in these one-liners that many other films have never, you know, never touched, at all. It was a huge, you know, especially a box office. God, it drew in over $1 million. You know, a film about the Beatles. You know, it was just, it's amazing. The film. I mean, we learned about this in my history of cinema class a couple years ago at school, and God, it's terrific. I mean, Richard Lester did a really cool thing for film. I mean, he also directed he ended up going on directing Help. A funny thing happened on the way to the forum: How I Won the War, Three Musketeers, and a couple of Superman movies as well. So
Although I will definitely say this is a great movie and I highly recommend watching it, the one thing I did not like about this movie, there was one thing, well, technically two, but they tie together, was they kind of overdid the music.
Yeah, I have to agree with that.
Especially since they had more than the six songs that they played in the movie, So they didn't have to repeat the same six songs over and over and over again in the movie. I get it, the movie's called A Hard Day's Night, but they did that song like four times in the movie. I could see it at the beginning, sure. I could see it at the end, sure. But you don't have to do it any more than that. And then they did the Can't Buy Me Love. They did that at least four times in the movie. It's like, man, don't you have more music than this? I'm pretty sure you had more hits than just these two. And so they do a couple of other songs throughout. I can't remember all of the songs that they did in the movie. I'm sorry.
Well, I think they were just doing, like, it was a it was kind of a vehicle also for the A Hard Day's Night album.
True.
And, I believe, you know, that's why.
And, like, I'm just happy, like, you know, I'm just happy to dance with you. That was kind of funny. It's like, wow, I love how they do the intercut of the actual songs that they're singing instead of actually having them perform, because they show Ringo hitting the hi-hat with the hi-hat closed when he was hitting the right crash cymbal in the studio.
Yeah.
And so you can, like, dude, you're hitting the wrong cymbal. Stop hitting the wrong... You've only got three cymbals there. How can you hit the wrong one in the movie the whole time and not the same one that you hit? You know, so I thought that was kind of funny. I thought it was good. I liked it. The music was a little overdone. But other than that, I would totally recommend anybody see it.
Good. So, I'm glad you liked it.
What about To Sir With Love?
Okay. I think Sidney Poitier is a terrific, terrific film. The film To Sir With Love, made in the based in England, made in 1967, or came out in 1967. It's basically about a teacher who ends up getting a job teaching a class of unruly students, and basically just kind of whips them into shape and turns them around. What I liked about this movie is that I thought the dialogue was really cool. I liked how his character got them into shape, to where at the beginning of the film, Sidney Poitier's character is very quiet. He plays an American. You know, very quiet, not raising his voice, until he just gets so pissed off that at first he screams at them, and then he just says, "I'm going to treat you all like adults. You know, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to do this, you're going to do that." And I thought it was terrific. It's a shame, really, that there are so many films like that. And I was thinking about that during while watching this and thinking, like, you know, there are just a lot of films about, you know, a teacher trying to change unruly students, make him do better with school. Like, what? There was one with Edward James Olmos, which I think was the last really good one that was made, like, in the late 80s, early 90s.
With the calculus students or whatever?
Yeah, Stand and Deliver?
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah, with...
Lou Diamond Phillips?
Yeah, Lou Diamond Phillips. That is a terrific movie. I like that over better than To Sir With Love. Now, the reason why I think that is that I think To Sir With Love is a fantabulous film for that time period, because that movie deals with a lot of the issues and a lot of the change that was going on in the 60s, which I think was pretty interesting. Like, he even, like, there's a scene where he's talking about, oh, and, you know, you like the Beatles, who, you know, they started a culture of, you know, new hair, you know, being a rebellious towards parents, being rebellious in school, and all this about rock and roll. But then what I think was really cool is that he talked about, you know, what this new, what the new outlook on young folk, you know, how they are now. But then he also talks about the positive qualities about that. And that's what I really, really liked about his character, was that it seemed like the stuff he talked about to really whip the students into shape was actually kind of made sense, you know, to where the movie went more in depth into, you know, how he changed these kids, opposed to, you know, like, you know, kind of like showing like a lot of montages, like, you know, over time this is what he did. But no, it actually picked out like key points within the semester that, you know, actually changed these kids' life. And that's what I really liked about the movie. And the only downfall about it, I thought, was that I thought the movie was fantastic for its time. I think watching it now takes away from the film. However, it does not take away from the specific dialogue that Sidney Poitier's character, Mark Thackeray, that he plays in the film. So, yeah.
So you think that the movie hasn't aged as well as it could have, but standalone, yes, is still very good.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think it's a terrific film, but I think it's terrific for its time. Yeah. I mean, if that makes sense. Then...
Sure. No, that's
okay.
Know. As long as you, the key for me on this one, I just was really hoping that you would enjoy it.
Yeah, I did. I actually really enjoyed it. And what I find to be interesting is that they made a sequel in 1996.
And that one was terrible. It was a made for TV movie.
Really? I didn't see it. But
yeah. I watched about half of it and it wasn't any.
Yeah. So yeah, it was. I enjoyed it. So good.
Awesome. All right. So, last but not least, then I saw The Devil.
Oh, the children's film.
Yes. Yes. It's a church going children's film.
Yeah. This. I leave it to the Koreans to make a film
that never makes me want to watch another film like that ever again. Oh,
that,
my God.
That is so bloody, and that is so gory, but at least in my opinion, was a fantastic movie.
This is the movie that is just, for me, is a walking contradiction. It is a fantastic movie, very well done, very well written. Creep me out, disturb me, I never want to see it again. Because it was just that damn good. I don't know what else to say. I was bothered, I was sickened. Nothing good came of it, but it was just so good, because aside from when the Secret Service guy or whatever hits the dude in the head like 550,000 times...
Oh, yeah.
Towards the end, and he comes out of that like he's pretty much fine. I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure he should have been dead.
Yeah, or at least a little have some brain damage.
Yeah, you know, I just thought, I thought that was kind of like I didn't get that. I thought that the movie was just way dark, very over the top. It's basically about a guy who is a serial killer. And just really doesn't care about anything other than being his sick, twisted, perverted self.
And he mainly targets, women. Young,
yes,
girls, right?
Yeah, young women, girls. Younger women, not necessarily girls, I guess.
I was gonna say, yeah, so the serial killer ends up killing, the Secret Service guy that we were talking about. They kill his wife. And he finds out... that's right, his fiance. And he finds out who he is. Eventually, he kind of goes through his line of suspects. And when he finally finds him, and I don't know about you, but I loved the limited action in the film. Like the little bitty fight scenes, especially the fight scene in that little, in the garden atrium thing. And then later on in the fight scene, when he's in the house, I thought with the shotgun, holy crap, I thought that was terrific. But basically, every time he encounters the serial killer, he kicks his ass, and he does something to the guy to where he always lives afterwards. And basically, he's doing it to basically, he's waiting to kill him for the right moment when he is going to be the most scared. And in doing so, the Secret Service agent is turning into a monster. So I kind of like the title, I Saw the Devil, could be played, I think, both ways. You know, he sees the devil, I think by the end of the movie, he sees the devil in himself, and he can also see the devil in, you know, the bad guy. Well, or either that, or maybe like the bad guy sees the devil in the good guy, and the good guy sees the devil in the bad guy. Either way. But yeah, no, the movie was freaking intense as hell.
Yes, very intense, very dark. Again, nothing good comes of it, but if you want to see a good Korean flick, start with this one. The only real true problem thing that I legitimately did not like about the movie was because it is super bloody, super gory, super violent, super dark. But that doesn't stop it from being a good movie. It, you know, granted, it's not going to be hardly anybody's cup of tea, but that doesn't. Again, that's still, this movie is really good, and I highly recommend it. Easy enough. If you were a fan of Seven, then see this movie. That'd probably be the easiest. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
At least in point of reference in terms of, you know, the darks and darkness of the movie and. You know,
kind of the twisted sense.
Yeah, the twisted sense of the movie. So there's your frame of reference. If you have seen Seven, then that would be a pretty good facsimile of I Saw the Devil.
Yeah, but this is the most... Oh, I was going to say, sorry. This is probably the most goriest film I've seen in a while. The goriest film I've seen in a while. So,
yeah.
If that means anything.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty. But the one thing that I did not like about the movie... was the music.
Oh, yeah, I remember you telling me about that.
The music, basically, the only problem... Now, when the music is not trying to do anything but keep the pace of the movie going, does a phenomenal job. It's very simple, very elegant, sometimes not at all, just so there is no music. It is just the sounds of what's ever happening.
Yeah.
But then there are times when it's deliberately trying to evoke an emotion. For example, when they find... Because the girl, this guy's... The guy's fiance, the girl that gets killed, is not just a Secret Service type dude's fiance. It's also the daughter of the chief of police. So could he have picked a more wrong person to kill? I don't know. But, you know, so... They find the and the music in the background really and truly to me sounded like it came out of a bad 90s TV movie.
See, I thought that only at the beginning when he goes to her gravesite. I thought the music there was a little too
again when it was movie. When it is trying to evoke an emotion.
Yeah,
I think it failed. I think it was too much. I think it was over the top. When it was just allowing the movie. To do its thing and just there as ambient sound, I thought it did great. So that was real. That's really my only downside of that.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm really glad you liked it.
I'm glad you liked it too.
It was a trip, man.
All right. So knocked out some movies. Excellent. So we have. Let's see here. I guess we need to do a classic movie recommendation. We'll jump that. We'll throw that in there right quick. We're looking at Andy Griffith's, from near as I can tell, the second movie that Andy Griffith ever did. His first movie was A Face in the Crowd, which is just an amazingly, such a good gripping drama. But we're going with his second movie to showcase his comedic talents was No Time for Sergeants. And this movie is absolutely hilarious. It was a play converted into a movie, and this was back when they could do this well. So you will not, you know, so fans of this particular style will not be disappointed. And again, this is one of those movies, just a very simple movie, great little story. If you can't see how Gomer Pyle was developed from this movie, then I don't know what's wrong with you. So that's what I have to say about that. Let's see here. We have 16mm Shrine, the episode from Twilight Zone. It's episode 4 from season 1, as you may have figured out to this point, we are recapping an episode a week of Twilight Zone. And this particular one has Barbara Jean Trenton as a, you know, basically she is a faded film star, and she just completely relives her past watching her old movies, and makes you wonder what good can come out of never advancing your life and only living in a particular stage of your life.
Yeah, it was definitely kind of especially a deep film, I suppose, because you hear of people that are actually like that, and I could definitely see how actresses could be like that as well, because they're so caught up and people remember, especially a lot of the big gorgeous female celebrities, a lot of people remember them as being, you know, really gorgeous, or being in that one movie they were in 30 years ago where they played the attractive, you know, the attractive so-and-so, and, you know, kissing and always with the attractive, you know, guy counterpart in the film. So it was just a very fun little, you know, creepy friggin' little...
It really was. It was a nice bounce back after Mr. Denton on Doomsday. And the thing is now she plays a faded film star. So she's watching movies from the 20s and the 30s, and you see her watching these movies, and it's like, well, man, it looks like she did these movies. It's because you see her the entire time as she sees herself.
Yeah.
And there's a brilliant twist that brings this out. Probably the last third. It's not at the very, very end, but it's definitely the last third of the show. And you finally realize that you've been seeing her as you see herself this whole time. And it's like, oh, and then it really starts to make sense. And then when the ending gets thrown at you, it's kind of like, wow, that's pretty twisted. But this is what the Twilight Zone is for. What do you think? Do you think this was a nice comeback after the third episode?
I definitely think so. Especially the whole idea of somebody like going insane, or that you think they're going insane, and it was just fun. I would highly recommend it. It's definitely one of my favorites, and it's mm-hmm. it's up there with the Bomb Shelter episode that I'm really looking forward to reviewing that one in the future whenever we get to it.
Oh yeah, we'll get there. It's not like we don't have all the time in the world to keep doing this show, right? So, okay, well, good. So that's, definitely, if you've been following along, hopefully you'll get a chance to watch this one. And if you haven't, then please jump in. There is no coherent storyline. This is an anthology show, so you can jump in and out to any episode you're listening to. If you haven't listened to, or if you haven't watched any of the other shows, you can jump in right with this one, and you'll do just fine. If you have been watching the shows, then we would love to hear your feedback based on whether or not you agree with us. So please, please do. Please contact us, let us know. So what we are watching next week, or over this week, we will be watching, I have recommended it's not the best movie in the world, but because he hasn't seen it, I just want to hear what he has to say about it. On Netflix, they've got, for those of you who have Netflix, they have a 5-star rating system, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. I gave it a 3-star rating. It's not the best movie in the world, it's by far not the worst movie. But I definitely want to see what he thinks about it, and the movie is No Escape with Ray Liotta.
And I will be recommending the movie Brick with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It came out not too long ago. It's a terrific, in my opinion, it's a pretty good low-budget movie. And I think it goes to show what kind of a good story someone can produce with a very low budget. And, not a lot of sets as well. So I think you'll dig it. You'll dig it. I have a feeling you'll dig it.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Well, that'll be good. And because, you know, we are eventually going to try and whittle this show down somehow, some way. The movie we're watching together this week is Horrible Bosses. So we'll be letting you know. I'm actually looking forward to that movie and have been for a while. So I'm very excited. Hopefully it'll be as good as what I've been aiming for. And if we end up watching any other movies, I'm sure we'll let you know about those as well.
Indeed.
So, I think we're here. I think we're at the end. I think we've managed to make it.
We did. 2 hours later, we finally got here.
Yeah, so please understand that we've been talking for 2 hours and 16 minutes. But what you get is just the best of the crap that we exude. All right, so we will make sure to have the links that we talked about earlier in the news segment for you so that you can check those out for yourself. Please feel free to let us know what you think of the show, what segments you like, whether or not you agree with what Tim thought of a movie or what I thought of a movie when we disagree. And definitely when you agree or disagree with us, whether we have agreed or not, we want to hear what you have to say. We might, you know, be able to read it on the show.
Yeah.
Please keep the ratings, the 5-star ratings, the 4-star, whatever, doesn't matter. Give us a rating. Let us know your comments either on iTunes or on our website. We want your feedback. We want to make this a good show for you to listen to. You can always catch us at, you know, at slscast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at theslscast. You can send us an email at theslscast@gmail.com. Catch us on iTunes. We obviously stream from the site. And, of course, the music that you hear is courtesy of Cries of Solace, awesome band, local band. You know, so please support them. You can find them at MySpace and also at Facebook, myspace.com/CriesofSolace, facebook.com/CriesofSolace. And again, I understand that they're getting their website put together so that they'll have their own .com as well. And should hopefully hear, if not by the next episode, then definitely the episode after that should have their new music melange for you. So definitely check that out. It's a great song. And I can't really think of anything else to add. Can you there, Tim?
Not really, other than look forward to new graphics on the site here.
Probably here
in a couple weeks or so.
I'm hoping, yeah, we should have everything completely finalized, set up here within the next couple of weeks. And we'll definitely keep you posted on that so we can have stuff that looks cool instead of generic stuff, which only looks okay. And all right, well, that is it then, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening and for putting up with us, and I guess we will see you next week.
Alrighty, take care, guys.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.